Guys, we'll notice I wrote Southern Ontario Dynamics Days at the bottom. I assure you that's a mistake, and I do not plan to talk until tomorrow. This is work with Simon Yang, who's in the School of Engineering at Guelph, and he's the one who does, he has a robotics lab, and he gave a talk in our department about robot path planning, and he had neural network where he had sort of Hodgkin-Huxley type cells that were interacting with each other as points on the grid, and it was using that to generate sort of an activity profile in your space to tell the robot which way to go towards the target. And so I talked to him afterwards some, and he wanted to know, can I have a proof that the target actually gets caught by the robot? Because he says, we're all engineers over in our department, and none of my students have done a mathematical proof. So he said, wonder if I could do it. So I sat down and looked at it for a bit, and the more I looked at it, the more I thought, well, you know, there's a lot of simpler way you can do this. And so that's what I'm going to talk about. And it's not going to be very special. Now, just a minute, I can see if I can move this up a little bit here. Didn't seem to like that. That's better. Okay, so what we're interested in is robot path planning in a dynamic environment where the target that you're after can move, as well as barriers in the space can move. And so what we've got is a distance propagating dynamic system. So from the targets, you propagate what the distance is to the target to neighboring grid points outwards. That's the basic idea. And we have a paper that's going to appear in the Transactions on Systems Man and Cybernetics this June. So what I want to talk about is a little bit about stuff from that paper, as well as some different updating schemes and different implementation ideas. I'll talk a little bit about capturing targets and sufficient conditions for actually being able to capture targets. And then a few last few things are just sort of things on the side. What if you want to actually shun obstacles, that is, not just avoid hitting them, but stay away from them some distance or something like that. What if you have multiple robots and targets, and the last one is sweeping the floor. So what do I mean by robot path planning? So the easiest thing to visualize is you actually have a robot sitting in a room driving around on the floor, and it's trying to avoid tables and things like that. That's probably not the most useful application as far as engineering goes. What you're probably thinking of in an engineering application is some robotic arm with maybe with two hinge points and 2 degrees of freedom, therefore, and it's trying to move around its two angles, theta and phi, to get at some spot. But the visualization is probably easier in the first case. And again, all these are 2D things that I'm going to show you, but if the algorithm extends to 3D, so if you have a robot arm with more degrees of freedom, there's no problem. The algorithm works the same. And also, I use regular square lattices in all these cases, but you don't need that. All you need is a grid that's somehow predefined, and every point on the grid has a defined set of neighbors at known distances. That's all you need. So here's our distance propagating system. First, a little bit of background. We like I said, you have a bunch of points in your space. Bi is the neighbor set for point I, and Dij is the Euclidean distance between I and its neighbor J. And the initial conditions for your system, so X will be my distance variable. Initially, you put it to be 0 if your position I is a target, and Xi at 0 is D, some maximal distance otherwise. So D could be the maximum distance you'd expect to see in the entire grid, depending on how big your grid is. And the dynamical system is very easy. You say at the next time step, you update X as follows. If point I is a target, then you keep the value 0. If point I is a barrier, you give your value D. And if point I is something else, then you take the minimum of D and F. And what's F? F is, well, you look at all your neighbors and you say, what area is your distance to the target plus the distance to my neighbor? And you take the minimum of all those. Okay, so X is always running between 0 and D. And when targets and barriers move, then when they arrive at a new position I, then Xi is immediately updated to either D or 0, respectively. Okay, so very simple. Now, in this grid, I'm thinking about a square lattice, but each point is connected not only horizontally and vertically, but also diagonally. So we have 8 neighbors. So what I want to say here in this picture is that under this system, the distance gets propagated out from the target at each time step to all 8 of its neighbors, and then out another grid, and then out another grid. But of course, distance is not the same between every neighbor. It's either root 2 or it's 1 if you're going diagonally or horizontally or vertically. So if you look at this target, the target 1 is the diamond and target 2 is the other diamond there. And the robot is the point P down here. And as the system starts, the distance information from this point goes through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 steps. So at the 8th time step, the distance from this target by this path to the robot is known. And so at time 8, the value of x at point P changes from d to 8 root 2, because that's the distance. But that's not actually the shortest distance to a target, because at the very next time step, the distance from this target, which is 9 time steps, and a distance of 4 plus 5 root 2, that's actually the less. And then on the 10th time step, 10 and higher, you get the distance again to target 1, but via the other path, which is a distance of 8 plus 2 root 2. So because you're updating to all your neighbors, and all your neighbors are not all the same distance away from you, you can propagate information along one path faster than another path. And so if you wanted to move, if you started moving immediately when you got the first bit of information, you'd start moving up the right-hand path, which would not be the optimal path if you wanted to get to the shortest distance to get to any target. So there's some issues there. Now, in the static case, this is basically a dynamic programming idea, solution to the shortest path problem. So if no targets can move and no barriers can move, all you're saying is, what's the shortest path to a target? And a dynamic programming solution would say, well, you start at your target, and you just go out to all the neighboring points, and you'd say, what's the distance, and you keep tacking it on until you hit the robot's location. In this case, though, in a dynamic programming sort of environment, what you would typically do is you update by the distance. You first update all to distance 1, and then you update to distance root 2, and then you go to distance 2, and then 1 plus root 2. But you're careful not to update farther distance ones before you've updated the shorter distance ones. You do it in order. In this case, since we're just doing it in each sweep, you just update every point by querying your neighbors. Like in the previous graph, you can get information at the robot point that's not the best information. It might have to take some time. And so you can have a little convergence test that just says, if my distance, if I know also the time step as well as the distance, so if I propagate the time step as well, or I keep track of it or something, then the distance divided by the d-min, so d-min is the minimum distance between any two points in the grid. If that's known, then you take the floor of that thing minus the number of points, and if that number is less than 1, then you've converged, definitely. So what you can do as a robot is you can wait until this number is less than 1, and then you know, okay, now I've definitely got the optimal information, and I'll go that way. So that's one thing you can do. But that's the static case. We're not really interested in the static case. We're interested in the dynamic case. So let me show you some simulations. So here's the first one. So this is a static case simulation. And once I get it started, I'll tell you what all the symbols are. The target is, of course, the bullseye, and the robot is the purple square there. And you can see the distance propagating outwards. The color coding is red if you're hot, close to the target, blue if you're cold and away from the target. And the little arrows are the directions to the nearest neighbor that has the information that gave me the update value, right? Okay, so every point, when you determine the what value I'm going to be by querying my neighbors, you take the minimum of which neighbor gives you the smallest distance. And so that, keep track of that direction and away you go. So that's the static case in that example. And then the gray is barriers. So it was walked around the barriers. So you notice there was a little bit of time, I'll just do the beginning part of it again, where the robot sat there until information came. So there were three frames in this movie sequence here anyway. There was more than 3 time steps. There were lots of time steps. There's one time step, you'd be only moving out each spot. So I want to show you another one. So this is a case where we're going to actually chase the target. So we have little triangular barriers there. Now the robot is the target is going to start here, and it's going to zigzag around these barriers, and the target's just going to come after it as soon as it can. So let's see if we can catch. And the target is moving a little bit faster than the robot. Or, I mean, the robot's moving a bit faster than the target. And you can see that it's doing a pretty good job of finding the best route. And once it gets right behind it, then it's just a matter of catching up to it. All right, so the way wheel. That's another one. And here's another example where the barriers are going to move this time, and the middle barrier is going to stay, but the top barrier is going to move across to the right, while the target moves across the top in the other direction. And the robot won't make it up the path here on the right-hand side before it gets blocked off. And so it has to turn around and chase it again. So. And away it goes. And in my implementation, I always choose, of course, there's often there's times where you can choose whether I go diagonally to my neighbor or horizontally. It doesn't really matter because they're both the same distance eventually to the target. In my implementation here, I always choose go a distance one if you can rather than a distance root two. That's why most of the lines are straight until you get to the diagonal spot moving over directly to the target. So it depends on how you implement that. So let's get that one away. And here's another interesting one where barriers, so we have a target's going to move around the outside of this whole thing, and the holes in these barriers are going to rotate in opposite directions. So watch another little movie here. And in this one, of course, as soon as barriers move, you have to worry about the robot hitting the barrier, and that's actually what's going to happen here, right there. So it bounces, and the way my implementation does it, if it comes up to the barrier, then it moves back to where it was and then it tries again. And then this time it's going to catch it straight on here. Okay. And you'll notice right at the very end there, there's two blue dots. That's because the barriers just barely moved and they got updated to values of D, and there hasn't been an update since then. So that's what happened there. Okay, so that's enough of those for now. So now I'll talk a little bit of alternate implementations. So in the current setup, you every time step, you go through every point on the grid, and you say, you ask all your neighbors, what's your distance to the target plus the distance to my neighbor, and that's my new value. So you can do better than that, of course, because especially in a static situation, you know, most of the points aren't changing. Once they got their optimal value, then nothing changes, and it just stays there. Why should I ask all my neighbors and compute this number and for no reason? So what you could do is, for one option, is say, if I get updated on time step N, then I tell all my neighbors to update themselves on the next time step. And you just do that. And if you weren't told to update the next time step, then you don't bother. So you don't waste your time trying to update people that aren't going to change. So that's one easy thing you can do. Another thing you can do, which is probably even better yet, is instead of going through the grid and just saying at each point, ask your neighbors and what's the value, you instead, this is more like a dynamic programming idea, you start at the target, and you pass the distance just to your neighbors. And the next time around is you only update if you receive the signal, in other words. So you think of each point as an independent processor, and I'm the target, I first send the distance out to all my neighbors, and the next time step my neighbors receive that signal, so they update, and then they send the signal out to all their neighbors, and so on. So you just do that. And now another idea is sort of what I call Gauss-Seidel versus Jacobi. So it's like the idea of iterative solutions to a linear system. So instead of the Jacobi solution, where I compute the hops across the whole screen, the hops across the whole grid by taking the value of all my neighbors at the previous time step, so why don't I, as I go across the grid, use the most updated information that I have? So as I go across the grid, if I've updated one of my neighbors, I'll use the updated value rather than the old value. Should be better. Gauss-Seidel generally is better than Jacobi. Okay, but it doesn't turn out to be quite that way. So here's again the obstacle avoiding solution with the Gauss-Seidel iteration. Now what happens here is I'm updating from the left across to the right. And in fact, what I've done is instead of going just down the rows, I go down one column, up the next column, down the next column, up the next column. That means as soon as you pass the target location, everybody to the right of me will have the exact value. It'll update immediately. And so what should happen is the information should get to the robot a lot faster than in the Jacobi case. And what it'll do is it'll come in from the right-hand side because I chose to come across this way. So watch it as we go. And at the one time frame, we were already there. But what did it do? Did you see what it did? No, I stopped it because it just rested. It's all the same. We'll do it again. Watch where it goes, the robot. Goes off to the right. Takes the suboptimal path. Well, the information got there quicker, but it happened to get there from the right-hand side, which was not the shortest path. But as soon as the robot got the information, it took off. Now, I can avoid that if I use that convergence criterion I had before, because this is a static case. But nonetheless, that can happen. But in the dynamic case, you can't really use that convergence criterion, because you don't know targets have moved, because you don't really know whether you're at the optimal distance anymore. So here's the target chase guy. So again, he starts earlier because the information gets there faster. So he should have a bit of an advantage. And he follows mostly the same path as he did in the other case. And when I was running this, I thought, oh, this is not very interesting. He's just going to get there a couple of time steps earlier because he left. He started a couple of time steps earlier. But then it came to this point right about here. And I said, holy cow, what's going on? Must be a bug in my program. So I started looking through my program to look for a bug, and no, I couldn't find any bug. But the reason it was doing, it actually took longer to get there because it did this little wibbly thing right there at the end. So why did it do that wibbly thing? Well, the reason it did that wibbly thing, the light's on. So if here's my target, so this is point has distance 0, this point has distance 1, root 2, 1 plus root 2, and so on. This distance will be root 2 and this distance will be 1. Now the target moves down to here, so that immediately gets updated to 0. This point is still 0. Now I come through with the updating by the Gauss-Seidel scheme, and I say, check this guy, everything's the same, doesn't get updated. This guy, everything's the same. This guy, the minimum distance is still 0 to where the target used to be, so he doesn't get changed. This guy doesn't update, he's now 1, and he's now pointing this way. Okay, so then I come through this column, this guy's 0, this guy has to get updated, he's not 0 anymore, so he's a 1 and pointing this way. This guy, he updates and becomes a 2 and points this way. And this guy says, all my neighbors, well, 2 would be 3 here, but it's actually better to go that way. 1 plus root 2, go that way, because that's less than 3, right? That's exactly what happened. Okay, the robot's coming down there, the target moved a bit, and it said, okay, I got to go that way. Because of the Gauss. That doesn't happen in the Jacobi scheme, but it does happen in the Gauss-Seidel scheme, because this guy was updated, and this guy wasn't, and I went to some old information. All right, so you might want to do, so if you want to try to do that scheme, you might want to say, well, Gauss-Seidel is better because it propagates the information farther, faster. So you might want to do a Jacobi close to the target and always use old information close to the target to avoid this problem, but use Gauss-Seidel if you're farther away because you're sending the information out faster. I don't know. I hadn't really decided what was the best way to do. But when I saw that, I was a little bit surprised, and so I thought it was worth a comment. Okay, so those are some implementation and schemes and so on. Now about some sufficient conditions for actually capturing a target. So first of all, if barriers can move, you never have a guarantee of capturing a target. So this is just the original picture that I had put on its side, where you've got a barrier and you have a target over here, and this guy, robot, moves around here, comes this way, but by the time it gets there, this barrier just closes off, and so I have to go the other way. And no matter how fast the robot moves, no matter how fast your system can update information, and no matter how slow the barrier moves, you can always construct the thing long enough so that you can't do it. Okay, so you never get there. So as soon as barriers can move, depends on your environment as to whether you can actually catch a target or not. So the proof is we allow targets to move, but we don't allow barriers to move, so we don't have to worry about that thing. So sufficient conditions for capture. Okay, so suppose the robot arrives at position I at some time t, and that's the robot, and the value of the distance at that point is less than d, okay? So it's f of I n minus 1. and n is the largest time step for which I've been updated at that point in time, t. So that means that xi of n has to have been equal to the distance of my neighbor at a previous time step minus the dij distance between me and my neighbor. So this is using the Jacobi scheme. For some neighbor j, I'm not sure which one it is, but there's some neighbor that was the case. So let u be the update frequency. And so the maximum amount of time since I last received this value from neighbor j is 1 over u. So u is the number of time steps per real time second. Okay, so 1 over u is the amount of time it takes to update once. Okay, so it's been that much time is the most amount of time since I last received this information. And the last time, the maximum amount of time prior to that, since j received the value of fj n minus 2 from some other neighbor k, is also another 1 minus u. So there's sort of two updates there. Whoops, twice. So the maximum time during which xj can be updated from fj n minus 2 when the robot arrives at j is these 2 over u's plus the time it takes the robot, so vr is the robot speed, the time it takes the robot to travel the distance dij. So there's also that much time in there. So that's the total amount of time that during which xj could have been updated. And in this time, how much can the target have moved? Well, there's actually so vt is the target velocity. So there's this part, and I've added another 1 over u. So I've got a 3 over u. Turns out that there's also the, if you work your way backwards, for when the target moved, it also may have moved, the target may have started moving just immediately after sending the original information out. So there's another 1 over u update at most. So this is sort of a hand-wavy argument. But there's basically, this has to do with the slowness of your updating, and this has to do with the amount of time it takes the robot to move, and that's how much distance the target can have moved. So even if you can update information infinitely fast, which you can't, but even if you could update information infinitely fast, then xj can at most be decreased by that amount, because that's the amount that the amount of distance the target has moved. So as long as dij, which is the distance I'm moving by the robot to get from I to j, as long as that distance is bigger than this distance, then I'll be decreasing my x value every time I arrive at a new neighbor point. Okay, so as long as dij is bigger than the distance that the most distance the target could have moved, then the robot will always capture target if you then replace that dij with dmin being the minimum distance between any two points in the grid. So those are sufficient conditions for capture. And the paper has a more rigorous proof of that. But so your update frequency has to be bigger than this amount. So you can see that in the limit as the target velocity approaches the same as the robot velocity, then your update frequency has to be infinitely large. Of course, if the target's moving faster than the robot, then in general you're not going to be able to catch it. Okay, so now just a couple of sort of interesting extensions to this. So suppose we want to not just avoid hitting an obstacle, but we want to stay a certain safe distance away from them. So one easy way to add this into the algorithm is you propagate two quantities. One is not just distance from the target, but rather you propagate distance from a barrier. And then the other quantity you propagate is the sum of the distance to a target and the accumulation of penalties. Now, what is the penalty? So at each distance from a target, you define a penalty function, which is what you're going to, you can think of it as the amount of extra distance the robot would be willing to move in order to avoid being that close to a barrier. And you do it sort of locally so that if you're going along the edge of a barrier, you're going to get a penalty at each point along right along the edge of that barrier. Okay, so you don't want your penalty too big, but you want it big enough so that, if you're as a barrier here, and instead of going right past it, I'd rather do an extra route to this way and a route to that way to sort of avoid it. That's the sort of penalty size you want. And so we have an example of that. So this one, it's the original problem. It's just that we've put in the penalty function. Now, it takes longer to propagate because we're propagating twice as much information, but you'll notice I don't go right close around it. I actually move farther away and go up far on the right-hand side there, or farther on the left-hand side to avoid being close to a barrier the whole way. And the rest is just the same, so I'll stop that. Okay, so that does take longer to propagate that information because you're propagating basically twice as much information. So you're updating, you know, twice as much computation effort is required. So what about multiple robots? So if you have multiple robots, then you also need a mechanism to avoid robots hitting each other or uselessly chasing the same target as well. So what I did in this one scheme is a local penalty function, sort of like every robot also sends out a penalty function for being close to myself. So you have to be a little bit careful here because you don't really, because the penalty function is sort of local, and unless you address the penalty function as a, to a specific robot, which takes a lot more computation about deciding whether this penalty belongs to me or to some other robot when the robot is looking at it. The penalty will apply to the robot itself. And so you want to be a little bit careful how you construct that penalty function because you can make yourself go downhill just by reducing your own penalty function, which doesn't actually really help you because you want to stay close to the target. So otherwise you'll need some sort of global coordination. Some sort of global master plan that says, okay, I'm controlling all my robots and I know which one each one is going to. So in this case, you're propagating the distance from a target as well as a target identifier. And so when a robot starts chasing one, then the central intelligence knows, okay, which robot is he chasing? And then I can tell my other robot, don't bother chasing him, go chase somebody else or do something else. That's more complicated, of course. So here's an example of multiple robots. So we have six targets here, four robots starting in the four corners, and the targets are just moving sort of randomly in these regions, and these barriers are going to move up and down and left and right as well. So and on the right-hand side, we'll have two robots coming after that same target and sort of bumping into each other and getting moving away. And on the bottom, you'll see a robot chasing, having a lot of time catching that target, because the targets are moving just barely slower than the robots. But they eventually all get there. And we got them all. So it did work on that one. And what's my last sort of thing to think about? So suppose you want your robot to cover all points in space. You want to sweep the floor. Okay, one of these vacuums that goes around and sweeps the whole floor. So one way is to define every grid point to be a target point. Okay, and then the way your algorithm chooses between equal target distances will affect how you work. So it, like I said, in my implementation, I always go, if I have a choice of going the distance 1 or a distance root 2 to a target, I'll go with the distance 1. But further than that, if I have a choice between going 1 up this way, that way, or down, I choose up, then this way, then down, then that way. But that's the way I've implemented it, and you'll see that it has an effect on things. And so you might want to think about what better information you could propagate other than just distance to a target, which would make things give a more efficient coverage. So here's the sweeping simulation. So the barriers here are static, and the target starts in the left corner and just starts. So he goes, he wants to go up, then he wants to go right, and then he wants to go down, and then he wants to go left in that order. So as soon as he can go up, he will. There he goes. And then he'll go right. And now he's got to go somewhere. So again, as soon as he can go up, he will. And now he's going to be stuck out in nowhere and has to go around this way. And you notice he's sort of jerky. He's stopping each time he hits a target because once he hits the target isn't updated immediately. He has to wait for the next piece of information to come to decide where to go next. But eventually he makes it there. So you might want to think of what better information you could propagate to do a better job than this guy does. And there he's done. So that's all. Thank you.